And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. It is time for another bowl preview picks cast. Tom Fornelli, Robbie Cowan, you know that they are joining me, and we are going to take you all the way up until about December 30th. So hold on tight. If you're listening to this on the weekend, we're going to start with the Bahamas Bowl, a bowl game specifically requested by our expert pickers, and then we will proceed on to bouncing around, focusing mostly on the SEC games. Make sure that you are subscribed on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher so that you can get the SEC on CBS podcast first and enjoy Bowl PicksCast 2. And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. Bowl Pick'em Part 2. Gentlemen, Robbie Cowan, Tom Fornelli, by request, by special request, we've got a lot of different bowl games that we're going to try to get to in this show, but we will not touch on either of the college football playoff semifinals or any of the New Year's Six bowls, but we're going to try and give you the best of the rest. Otherwise, as much as we can to get you through next week, I will be belking it, so we'll try to get through those 29th games. Or at least the greatest hits from them. But by request, we are starting with Old Dominion in Eastern Michigan, the Bahamas Bowl. Because, as Tom argued, if you tuned into this podcast right now, if you're listening, then you want to know our pick for the Bahamas Bowl, even if the Bahamas Bowl has already happened. Old Dominion, Eastern Michigan. Oh, I mean, by the way, guys, what's up?
Hey. What's going on?
Thanks for the intro, Chip.
It was lengthy, but we had some business to take care of, and I had to let the people know about these monarchs. So we are all on Old Dominion -4.5. Interesting notes about this game: Old Dominion and Eastern Michigan actually had a home and home, 2014 and 15. Coaches know each other. Chris Creighton, you know, he's been running through the brick walls. Bobby Wilder, yep. You know, running wild, crazy offense, all sorts of offensive team records. I've been digging through the game notes. How do y'all feel about this game?
I look forward to thinking about Popeye's chicken while watching it more than anything.
Bahamas
I
Bowl
look
is
to eating Popeye's chicken.
While yeah, Bahamas it. Bowl is a pretty incredible setting.
Yeah,
it's great. It's in like an old track and field stadium that they like retrofitted for football. There are approximately 300 people there, and they are having the time of their life, though, because they're in the Bahamas watching football on Christmas. Like, there's not a lot of people there. It's mostly like family, and that's great. And I love it. And it's just like my favorite thing is they fly a Popeye's flag.
Right.
Like high and proud, as every place should.
It's as though it's lined up with the other countries. Like these are the countries
it should actually be higher than just about, I'd say, 85% of the countries.
We ran out of we ran out of Cajun spice
to the boneless wing bash.
But as far as picking this game, there are some interesting trends that are hard. It's hard to get a real read on because Old Dominion against the spread 8-3-1, 8-0-1 is a favorite, and it beats. Eastern Michigan against the spread 9-3, 6-2 is an underdog. So it's like you're going against a trend in any direction. So I went with Old Dominion simply because I just think it's probably a little bit better than Eastern Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Robbie.
Yeah, that's where I went. Yeah. I think Old Dominion's probably a better team. Finished better as far as like beating teams. Eastern Michigan lost 3 of the last 5. You know, I think this is Eastern Michigan team that's like really excited to be in a bowl because, you know, they've been staples of the bottom 25 for a couple years now. Your old friends. Mm-hmm. So like they're happy to be there. I think they're going to play hard, but I just think Old Dominion is the better team. You mentioned their record against the spread as a favorite, just really, really good. And I just, you know, I like the way that they play football at the Monarchs.
This is one of those difficult games to pick, too, simply because you never know how a bunch of teenagers are going to respond to a week at a tropical island.
Yeah. Right. Y'all, right. We're going to Nassau.
Yeah. I mean, they were swimming with dolphins like 3 hours before. How excited are they to actually play in the game? You know what I mean?
Also, I love that they play it at like one in the afternoon, so the guys just have like the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I were playing in this game, I would be like, Coach, let's run the football a lot. Like, let's try to get this thing over in a tidy 3. Because I got me a scuba lesson at 4:30.
Honest question for both of you. Let's say you're on one of these teams and you're in the Bahamas Bowl and you're down in the Bahamas. You're spending however much time you're down there. You're doing all these events. The game's sponsored by Popeyes, so you know you're eating some Popeyes along the way. Is the game not the least attractive part of this trip to you?
Absolutely.
Oh, there's no doubt. Like, I have it's no like,
you're like,
desire.
Damn it. I got to go play this game now. I'm just going to sit on this beach.
I would have a 3-piece spicy on the sideline.
If I'm a freshman or sophomore or under 21 in general, I'm really mad that I'm going to have to sneak around to get on these tables. Because they got them down at the Atlantis, right?
Atlantis has the casino.
Yeah, nah, because that's always one of those situations where from a lot of times my experience or my understanding is that the rule is basically like, don't get yourself in trouble. If you're 21, you know, if you're junior or senior, we can't stop you from, when we give you free time, participating in something that you can do.
As somebody who has never gambled outside the borders of the United States, do you have to be 21 in the Bahamas to gamble?
I don't know, but I think that you could at least like
that's a good question.
There would be the expectation, I think, for if you were running a program, it would be the expectation at least that you would expect at least adult like behavior, like not using a fake ID.
I guess, but I just don't know if the Bahamas has the same puritanical roots that we have here in the United States. So, I mean, you might be able to gamble there at 8.
Oh, that's also true.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I would be trying not to get in trouble. I would try not to get a team rules suspension.
I mean, you know.
I'm not trying to Trevone Boykin this.
As long as I can stay in the Bahamas and continue to eat that Popeye's chicken, I might eat a suspension.
No, because if you get suspended, they're flying your ass home.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the big reason you don't.
And you are on your best behavior.
Until Saturday night.
And then it's just, let's tear it up.
Trevone Boykin was at the Alamo Bowl, like the up-the-street bowl for him. That's why he didn't care.
No. Yeah. No. I remember that. I was, because I woke up after an evening, and I was like, nothing will have to be done in the morning. I can get a little sleep.
Nope.
Incorrect!
Trevone Boykin.
Robbie, we need somebody to write. I was like, uh-oh, Trevone!
Boykin really, really etched his way into my memory for the bowl week team rules violations.
My goodness.
Bowl week rules violations Hall of Fame. Too many people get sent home for missing curfew. If you're going to miss curfew, at least deck somebody at the local bar.
I want to see. I wonder if... If the Seahawks get to the Super Bowl, let's see what Trevone does that week.
All right, let's start bouncing around a little bit, just so that if you tuned into this podcast for picks, you don't have to wade through too many.
No, let's spend another 20 minutes on the Bahamas.
I like this one. West Virginia and Miami. Robbie.
Canes.
We got Canes -2.5. Robbie's on Miami. I'm taking West Virginia. Tom's taking West Virginia.
Nope.
Are you switching?
Tom is switched, yeah.
Oh.
They have not updated. Brandon has not updated the site.
Wait, are you on the Canes or are you on West Virginia?
I'm on the Canes.
It says Canes for me.
Oh, it does not say Canes. Maybe I should hit refresh.
Maybe you should hit that refresh button.
Oh, let's look at the magic. Here it comes. Here it comes.
Did you just switch?
Oh, it's the U, baby.
Oh, it is the U. Look at that.
Yeah.
Cached version. All right, well, y'all talk to me. I think that Miami is the more inexperienced team here. I'm not hearing a lot of confidence from Mark Richt, old CMR, when he's saying it's sad that people are skipping bowl games, but he's also saying, yeah, like, what about getting the young guys some work? And Mark Richt looks at the reporters like, he's like, listen, man, we're already down to our young guys. There's no getting young guys work. So tell me why you like this Miami team.
Plays some good defense, and they're 8-2 as favorites this season.
Yep. And there, you know, another thing too, it's just like, it's number 16 West Virginia versus an unranked Miami, a 10-2 West Virginia versus an 8-4 Miami. Miami's the favorite. And it's like, it's one of those lines where you're kind of like scratching your head. And it's whenever I see something like that, it's like, okay, I feel like West Virginia is what they want you picking.
Yeah.
And I'm not falling for that crap.
Yeah. So the argument in the pick is Miami's the better team, period. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Uh-huh. That's what I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, West Virginia, we've had so many discussions about this team already this year, and we're already hated by that fan base. And it's a good team, but as we've seen, when it runs up against other good teams, it's not that good.
All right, let's take it to the Belk Bowl.
Belk.
Just so much love for the Belk Bowl. So much love for the Belk Bowl.
Love the Belk Bowl.
I'm thankful for the Belk Bowl for giving me Dak Prescott's last college game last year. Didn't, yes. Honestly, guys, did not know at the time that would end up being something that I would hold on to. It was, at the time, it was pouring rain, and NC State had just gotten pounded. So everyone that I knew that was at the game was certainly not in a good mood. And I just kind of sauntered back to Raleigh. But boy, now that Dak Prescott's turned out to be something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right, so this year we got Virginia Tech and Arkansas. Very excited about this. Virginia Tech -7.5, the way that we picked it. Both you guys are taking the Hogs. Is this a principal play with the hook?
Woo pig, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of points. And this is a Virginia Tech team that I don't feel like they I don't know.
It's a total homer pick.
They tend to play close.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, so I'm somewhat terrified simply because, you know, Arkansas's defense, especially the run defense, is so bad. Yeah.
Y'all.
And they will lose games by like 30.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there's definite fear here. It's that hook, man.
Yeah.
It's got me. And Virginia Tech is so capable of laying an egg in these kind of games.
But Virginia Tech also has the capable to like hang 45 on them.
Yeah, but if Arkansas was like a 9-3 team, I would take Virginia Tech to cover. But since Arkansas is only what, 7-5?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that they'll probably hang with Virginia Tech. I feel like Virginia Tech just plays to its opponent at times.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't like the hook at all. I think that Virginia Tech is the better team. I hate Arkansas's defense, and there's just too many playmakers. Like, I mean, there's an Isaiah Ford. There's a Bucky Hodges. Like, Gerard Evans got real good at times this year. I think the Hokies can go out there and stunt. I think they might.
They easily could. But
oh, yeah. It wouldn't surprise me. Like, honestly, I think it's either like a 3-point game where Arkansas could win, or it's them getting thumped.
Right, right. Okay, cool. Yeah, I don't think
it's like Virginia Tech is like a solid. It's either like, I don't think there's much middle ground for me in like solid like 7-10 point win like area. Like, I think it's like 2 touchdowns or more for Virginia Tech, or Arkansas has a chance in the final possession to win it.
And also, just based on history, even though, I mean, this has been a down year for it, in bowl games, I tend to take the SEC team, especially when it's getting points.
Mm-hmm. Even in a down year for the SEC.
It might not work this year, but right. I'm saying in general, over the last however many years, if there's an SEC that's an underdog, you're typically taking it and being happy about it.
All right, well, let's keep it in the SEC, Tom. I want you to talk to me about Mississippi State, Nikki Fitz putting the hammer down on Miami, Ohio. Because I'll tell you right now, I just did it as a sentimental pick. I mean, Mississippi State's the better team and should win by 2 touchdowns. But boy, it's fun to think about Miami of Ohio being up 21-20 going into the fourth quarter.
Listen, if you want to go the sentimental pick, fine. It's just...
No, I think the MAC is bad. I kind of think the MAC
is... The MAC is really bad.
Yeah, the MAC's bad.
The MAC is very bad. Western Michigan was really good.
Everybody else was bad.
Toledo was pretty good. Ohio was okay.
Decent.
Everybody else was really bad. And you look at this Miami team, it started the year off with a loss to Iowa, a loss to Eastern Illinois, a loss to Western Kentucky, a loss to Cincinnati, the loss to Ohio, and the loss to Akron. And then it put together that six-game win streak. It's just those six wins came against Kent State, Bowling Green, Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan, Buffalo, and Ball State. Not exactly great teams. And Mississippi State, I know, is a 5-7 team in a bowl game, but it's a 5-7 team from the SEC West taking on a 6-6 Miami, Ohio team from the MAC East.
How dare you besmirch the name of SUNY Buffalo?
It's less than two touchdowns. If it's at 14.5, maybe I start leaning towards the Redhawks. But at 13.5, come on, man. Come on. Mississippi State going to win this one by 100.
Yo, Mississippi State's going to stunt all over the Redhawks in this game.
They better. If they don't, that's like,
it's a bad look.
Struggling against a MAC team in a bowl game, that's... Cool.
Yeah, Robbie, man. I'm all sentimental pick here.
This is sentimental, and also, I mean, Miami of Ohio 6-2 as an underdog. Mississippi State 1-4 is a favorite. Trends.
Yeah, I know.
I have to lean on the trends to justify this pick because there's really not another reason to. Other than the fact Mississippi State can't really play defense, and Miami of Ohio might just stumble in some points. They can't score, really, but they might fall backwards into some points and keep it close. If you like Miami of Ohio, you take the under in this game.
Because that's what it would be.
Because 58.5, it cannot go over that because Miami of Ohio can't score more than 25 points. So, yeah. No, you know, that's just a little, if you were going one way, you go that way as well. So, I think if you're taking Mississippi State, you probably are looking at the over. It just gives up points to pretty much everyone, like a couple touchdowns at least, close to 20. But if they are winning this by the near two tutties, like that probably means they're in the 30s.
Mississippi State will have a matchup advantage every single time they snap the ball on offense.
Absolutely.
At every position.
Absolutely. But the one thing that they are really bad about is turning it over in the red zone.
Hey, that's how you don't cover spreads.
Nick Fitzgerald loves a good end zone interception.
I mean,
he just loves throwing. There's
a whole cradle of coaches that could make this game weird. Miami of Ohio leads in the fourth quarter, 21-20. Mississippi State has to storm back. Real gutsy final drive by Nick Fitzgerald. You heard it here first.
I love it.
Let's keep it in the SEC. Let's go to the Doors.
Woo! Shreveport.
The Who Wants to Be Here Bowl.
Ain't nobody.
I have more confidence in Derek Mason and the Doors wanting to be here. And you give me 4.5? Yeah.
I mean,
I have no doubt that Derek Mason, no matter what, will have that team ready to play football by the time the game starts.
Yes, at least the defense. And your fun little fact: Kyle Shermer has been having a nice little close to his season. 683 yards, 4 tutties in the last 2 games. All of a sudden, and you know when he did that, it's amazing how it works when the passing game can start opening things up.
Ralph Webb no longer only stopping after 3 yards.
Right. All of a sudden, the running game gains more than 3 yards a carry. They were averaging like 4.6 in the last 2 games. So NC State's a really good run defense, but not a very good pass defense, 94th in pass defense.
Hey, feisty front. That's what you got at State, a feisty front.
Feisty front for sure. But if Shermer's going to have some opportunities to pick up some yards. The problem for Vanderbilt is Vanderbilt does not score passing touchdowns. They had 9 all season. It's not great. Going to see a lot of work for the old Vandy kicker, I think. A lot of passing yards between the 20s available against the pack. But I think this is just tight game. A lot of field goal kicking.
Hey.
Vanderbilt's the best red zone defense in the country. And one of the worst red zone offenses. NC State real good at stopping the run, and Vanderbilt can't score in the red zone unless they're running the football. So field goals, and if it's field goals, you take the 4.5.
Robbie, would you say that as the season has gone along that Kyle has become more and more Shermer with himself?
I would say so.
NC State, speaking of reasons to like the Doors, to cover a four and a hook on this game line, NC State's field goal kicking situation's been pretty bad. Don't know if you remember this game down in Death Valley earlier this year, where if a couple very makeable field goals had gone through the uprights, NC State beats Clemson.
Yeah, this is going to be a rock fight.
A lot of missed field goals in this game.
There are missed field goals. There are going to be red zone fumbles. I will call at least two red zone fumbles.
Yum. Yummy.
Over under on Cunningham tackles.
16 and a half.
Yeah, I've got to think that in a bowl game where someone else might not care.
Get a lot of carries.
Oh, yeah. Dizzy Days.
They've been feeling him. They've been feeding him recently. Against UNC, he got, 21 carries, something like that? Like, starting to feed the boy? Cunningham going to be chasing him down.
Yo, there's a really funny response from NC State to Matt Canada's rise. Because Canada got canned by Doran at NC State. Yeah. And so then he, kills it at Pittsburgh the next season, gets hired at LSU.
Yes.
And NC State's like,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're looking at their own offense. It's like an interesting amount of pressure on the current offensive coordinator, Eli Drinkwitz, and the current quarterback, Ryan Finley, who came from Boise State for the same reason. It's an interesting expectation level that they have to meet now.
They need to start scoring 50 points a game.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if this offense is scoring 42 points per game. Be very interesting to watch.
I don't think it is.
Yeah. All right, let's keep it in the SEC. Let's go to Texas A&M and Kansas State. Man, you talk about sentimental picks. Sentimental pick for me is all about Kansas State plus 2.5. But this Kansas State team really disappointed me. I feel like, Tom, that I watched this Kansas State team on a lot of third and threes. A screen pass went into the dirt. The play was set up well in classic Bill Snyder fashion. Everything was good for the jailbreak screen to work, except the pass went into the dirt. A lot of that happened this season.
Yeah, it's not the same Kansas State team. I mean, you're always I took Texas A&M minus the points, and you're always a little scared of Kansas State.
Hang on. We might have another flip flop on the line here.
Are you on Texas A&M?
No, I think Kansas State is favored. No, wow. They're not. Never mind. Okay. I had that wrong.
All right.
Okay.
Go on, Tom.
Fix that in the giant chat.
Throwing me off here. No, I'm a little scared. It's just Kansas, like you mentioned, this has been an uncharacteristically bad Kansas State team. Not in the final record. It's just this is a team that normally wins game and covers the spread at the same time. But this year, the Wildcats, they're only 5-7 against the spread. They've played six teams that finished at least 6-6 this year, and they only won two of those games. Both of those wins were against Baylor and TCU. And it's a Kansas State team that I think has been more of a bottom feeder than the Kansas State team we typically see where it really competes with teams that have more talent than it. So I think we can all agree that Texas A&M has more talent than Kansas State, and it's really just a question of whether Texas A&M is interested in playing this game. If the Aggies show up and they're ready to play, they should win this one with ease.
They should, but they haven't cared since the Bama game about anything. Like, they just have – I mean, like, they lose to Mississippi State. They lose to Shea Patterson in his first start ever on the road. They beat Utah by 13 at home after those two losses, and then they get smoked on Thanksgiving by LSU. Texas A&M just has not cared. Since the Alabama loss, they got popped in the mouth and didn't respond, and I just don't think they're going to care about the down-the-road bowl.
Understandable. Listen, man, I give it to you. I'm telling you, my pick is not even for Texas A&M as much as it is against Kansas State.
That's fair.
I know Kansas State too well, and this is not a good Kansas State team.
I got to take a team. And you know what? I treat this like a Big 12 game where I just take the points.
It used to be a Big 12 game.
Formerly Big 12 opponents. That
take points.
Counts for me this season. I take the points. When in doubt, we take the points. And we are taking K-State because they are getting points.
All right. Well, yeah. Hey, let's talk about taking the points with let's talk about laying the points with these Bulls, Robbie.
Ooh.
Yee. Yeah. Dog.
Yeah.
WYD.
Buddy. South Carolina's it's not like they've been covering as an underdog. They've been an underdog a lot. They're 3-4-1.
Okay.
That defense is decent, but I don't think they got an answer for USF. USF puts up points, baby. And look, if the Bulls put up 30, they cover. South Carolina cannot score. I know Jake Bentley's been better.
But
I know you want to talk about your baby boy, Jake Bentley. Beamer Benz.
No, but like South Florida's defense.
They're not that good. I know
South Carolina's
offense is terrible.
South Florida scores, but you know who was calling the plays?
Slick Willie.
And he ain't there no more.
I know. But I also like teams in the interim coach spot.
Oh. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
I like
Interesting.
Teams in the interim coach spot. I like the let's play for a guy, get them out. I like it.
Is Willie coaching?
I know that's not always popular, but I tend to lean on that. I like him.
Dog, I just saw Tom Herman. I just saw Tom Herman's team, even though Tom Herman was not there.
But that wasn't the interim coach.
It was the next
coach.
New
coach. And we were wrong. We thought that was going to be something that wasn't. It doesn't always work.
Thought it was. Now it wasn't.
That's a Houston team that was fickle all year. There were times that Houston team didn't care in the middle of the season.
Fair.
Come on. The South Florida team is spunky.
10.5. Like, South Florida, I agree with you. South Florida, like, you should win this game. But South Florida wins this game. South Florida gives up a late Jake Bentley touchdown to win by 10. 10 and a hook? Come on.
I don't care.
Listen, it's like I already discussed, an SEC team getting points in a bowl game against a Group of Five school.
Robbie, your SEC bias is showing.
My hatred for the SEC.
Yeah, let's keep it going.
I cannot stand the conference.
Let's keep it going with Georgia TCU.
I'm actually on the Bucks.
Oh, okay. I'm not.
Actually, Kenny Hill will throw 3 interceptions.
Hell yeah, he will. But how many touchdowns?
Georgia's defense has been really good to close the season, actually. I've been fairly impressed by them against teams that won't pass. Like, they weren't great against the Bees.
Nah, they'll be good against all the plays they've seen on film, but Gary Patterson ain't rolling in with the normal playbook to this game.
I mean, that's fair, but I think Georgia, and they got a little, I think they're going to be energized going into next year because they're getting a lot of those boys back.
I know.
Lorenzo's back, Chubb's back, Michelle back. Like I think they're going to be in a much more like let's carry momentum in place than like TCU.
Okay.
Which like what are you playing for if you're TCU in this game?
Hey, I've seen too many games where I come out of it with my jaw on the floor and I'm like, "Nah, Uncle Gary. That dude can coach. That dude can prepare for a game."
But I've been disappointed all season with it. I kept waiting for it during the year.
Like last year's Alamo Bowl only furthered my belief in the Gary Patterson bowl coaching god.
Yeah, but last year's TCU team was better than this year's TCU team.
Yeah, I mean that's my thing is I kept waiting all year for the Gary Patterson bump and it never happened.
All right. I mean, I don't have enough belief in Georgia to ride. Tom, what you got?
I mean, I've got my own false narratives that I'm filling out where as TCU is the team I feel like that just wants this season to be done and Georgia is the team that wants to send a message going into next season.
That's where I'm at.
Okay.
It's really it's
dogs feel dog. I think the dogs just feel a little spunky. Like I said, they're getting those 4 seniors back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to really get it in recruiting. Like, I feel like they're starting to feel it a little bit.
Okay.
Feeling spunky about coming into 2017 as SEC East favorites. And
you're not doing that without beating TCU, baby.
And looking forward to somehow losing to Vanderbilt and screwing that up in like week 12 next year. Can't wait. Dogs.
Let's go ahead and tackle this one. Nebraska, Tennessee -3.5. Tom, you're on the Vols. What you like?
I don't really like a whole lot about this game. I've just been, this is personal more than anything. Nebraska's been kind of mean to me lately. It's like no matter which way I'm going on the Huskers, they've been kind of sticking it to me. So I'm just kind of like sticking it to them now. Screw you. Go Vols. Rocky Top. Yada, yada.
I'm looking back again. In case you can't tell, I am a bowl history that plays a big role in my head. And last year, that 5-7 Nebraska team came in, told y'all what was what and who was who. So I'm riding with it.
Tennessee also can't stop the run. Yeah, like they couldn't tackle you or me.
I have no damn idea what's going to happen in this game. It's just one of the. It's like somebody's going to win. Really, that's all I know. Somebody is probably going to win this game.
You give me three and a hook for a team where we've got reports coming out of Knoxville saying there's bad vibes around the football center. Nah.
Hey, no, they're going to.
Love when the bad vibes are around the football center.
Those bad vibes are going to bring them tighter together, man.
Energy vampires. Hey, speaking of energy vampires, I really hope UConn can not have such a bad football season next year.
Diaco After Dark needs to make a triumphant return.
It got real bad. Do you want to talk about red zone? I feel like I saw more UConn red zone turnovers than any other instance.
Honestly, is there like a more depressing team to watch on a yearly basis? Not just, you know.
See, and that's where I don't know. I want to say that on a 5-year span, we could come up with somewhat a more sad team. But certainly recently, it's not been a joy.
There was BC, Boston College and Wake Forest both turned it around this year.
They are performance art. They are so beautiful
I love. Yeah, that's the other thing is I thoroughly enjoy watching them. So I can't talk. But I don't even get joy out of watching UConn.
Yeah, I feel like every time I see UConn on television, it's a night game at Rensselaer Field. It's dark. It's cold, and the stands are empty. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
And they're not doing much of anything on the field either. It's just every UConn game I watch, it feels like some sort of dystopian nightmare.
Well, that's going to be the kind of game pretty soon. Like because Saturdays are easy to schedule around and you kind of work it out and you can normally get some freelancers from the area, the UConn games on ESPNU will be the first college football games that we start getting the announcers are in Bristol instead of being at the site.
Oh, hell yeah. And it's funny because it's a 5-minute drive away.
Yeah, no, they're still going to be like, Steve, we just put on this headset and talk about this game.
They just hand some interns headsets and a monitor.
Because you catch that with college basketball now. Where it's like,
they do it a lot for basketball. Well, they've got how many damn teams to cover?
No doubt. No, I'm visualizing the dystopian future you're describing where I'm like, that's the first game where it gets real sad.
Well, let's bring this up. I mean, I've seen people talk about this, and there's some out there that really don't like it. Do you care at all?
Not at all.
No, I couldn't care less. Like,
I agree it's sad. I do wish that if I had my choice, I would rather my commentator be there, but it's not what I'm not going to cry about it.
Okay, cool. Because, I mean, I don't know how often there really is information that a guy gets while there that they can't get.
Yeah.
Watching from a studio.
It's only when there's a controversy with the ref, because I do think particularly for basketball, For football, it actually matters less. For basketball, mm-hmm. You're able to like overhear those conversations and provide that information to the audience. I do think there's value in that.
Yeah, being on the baseline for that. Yeah, I agree with basketball, but yeah, football, like, I mean, how often do you get something off of those walk-off coach interviews that you go, oh, that's really helpful. Oh, we're going to try and not have so many penalties in the second half? Okay.
Oh, you think the turnovers are bad. Oh.
Oh, gotcha. You want to see more out of the offense. You want them to execute better.
Got it.
You wish you need to be more aggressive, do you?
All right. Hey, speaking of, let's try and squeeze a couple more in here. Speaking of BC, how about this Maryland Boston College game?
Quick lane.
That's
the quickest lane.
Talk about a dystopian nightmare. Boston College, Maryland, Detroit in December.
I knew that they were big time when I was reading a straight up USA Today paper style, and there was a half page ad all for the Quick Lane Bowl with the big Boston College helmet and the big Maryland helmet. And I was like, congrats, guys. This is why you win six games for this national exposure. This is why you win six games.
You know, it's like when Adam, our editor, asks us, you know, if we're going to cover any games, and it's like, this is the only game that's within driving distance for me. And I'm sitting there and I'm trying to figure out, do I want to make that trip? Do I want to drive the 5.5, 6 hours or whatever it is to get to Detroit so I can watch Maryland and Boston College play?
I can't wait to take the under on this game, though.
Tom's just sort of staring out his window, looking
at him. I'm telling you, if it wasn't the day after Christmas, I would go.
Right, no.
If it was on the 27th instead of the 26th, I would make that trip.
That is
go watch some dudes play football.
That is definitely a part of it. But it's like, do I really want to shovel my car out on the day after Christmas? Drive all the way to Detroit.
Tom's got a garage. Tom doesn't have to shovel nothing now.
Oh, nice.
Woo!
That's how we roll with that CBS money.
Garage money.
That's when you listen to the picks on this podcast, you get that garage money.
I wish I could sell that highlight as part of a SEC on CBS promo to CBS Sports Radio. that'd be the clip that we use to show how awesome we are.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what about
He's got a garage.
I'm going with Boston College because I'm trying to win that garage money.
I'm just here. When in doubt, I'm taking the dudes.
I mean, Maryland just does not give me a lot. Maryland could come out and win this game, but I don't have a lot of confidence.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know a lot about Maryland football this year. And they got smacked by some good teams. I kept picking them to cover, and they kept losing by 33, so I stopped picking them.
Let's be real. There are some Big Ten East teams that are just getting punished right now.
I just kind of stopped paying attention to anybody in the Big Ten East that's behind like the Michigan third place level. I was like, well, they're gonna get smacked this week.
I will also admit that if the teams in the Big Ten, I know less about Maryland than I know about the other 13.
Yes.
Because it's more to me, it was just more the way their schedule worked out, because they didn't really have any huge non-conference games. They had the West Virginia game, and I guess, you know, that was the very first week or whatever it was, so we didn't know what West Virginia was at that point, so there was really no point to pay attention to it. And it's like every game Maryland had a chance to make an actual statement in, like you said, they were getting crushed by Michigan or Ohio State, and then they'd be beating Indiana and all. So it's like there was never really a purpose to watching Maryland this year.
No.
I don't know all that much about them either, but I'm taking them against Boston College because you know what I know about Boston College?
It can't score.
It can't score points.
Nope.
They might not have to. Yeah. I'm taking the under. Both these teams 8-4 on unders this season.
Oh, that's beautiful.
If you love your trends, it's 43.5, and that might be too much. If you combine their scoring offenses, and that's like on average, you're at 44. So like that's barely over, and that's on average against bad, including like the games against like cupcakes.
It's only appropriate that we bridge from Boston College's game to Wake Forest, and that's where Robbie is taking Temple. Lame duck Temple. Yeah, because that's right. So this falls back into the pattern. You really are on the interim coach.
Well, this one is a little less on that and a little more on the fact that Temple's 12-1 against the spread this season.
Yo!
And I mean, that's the best in the country by a decent little margin. And 7-1 is favorite. Wake 5-1 is underdog. Wake can do it as an underdog. I fear Wake will not be scoring points here.
I got Wake's
defense.
They
are 120th in scoring offense, and Temple is 8th in scoring defense. That doesn't bode well for my friends in Winston-Salem. Look, I love Wake Forest, and this hurt me to do. It's a lot of points. It goes against a lot of principles I have. But, yeah, I think Temple wins this, like, 20-6.
No, this is a field position game, baby. Wake Forest wins the game with field position.
Well, if they still had Alex Canal, I would take him.
Yeah.
If they still had the legend. Remember the season Alex Canal had 93 punts?
I'd forget.
I do.
Oh. Tom, what's your Wake Forest angle here?
Well, a couple are, first of all, now that Tommy Elrod's gone, nobody's going to give Temple Wake's game plan.
There you go.
So that scoring offense is about to turn up.
Now we're going to see what this Deacs offense is really made of. But I also I honestly feel, you know, Temple, it's not just that it's Matt Rhule left for Baylor. It's that your Temple, you just won your conference. And, you know, you crushed Navy while doing it. And your reward for winning your conference is a trip to the Military Bowl to take on a 6-6 Wake Forest team. Your coach is left. It's Jahad Thomas and Philip Walker's last game, so maybe they want to ball out and show out and get, you know, for one last time. But I just don't have a lot of faith in how excited or pumped up for this game Temple's going to be. Now, it could win this game, but I just feel like 13.5 is too much because even though Wake Forest's offense isn't much, Wake Forest still has a pretty good defense, and I feel like they could at least rein in that Temple offense enough to stick within the 13.5.
Wake is excited about this game. They are galvanized.
Yeah, they don't get to go to bowls very often.
Nah, they are galvanized by the WakeLeaks drama. There's a bunch of bright individuals that are going to come out here trying to win this bowl game.
A lot of bright individuals.
Our friend Martin Rickman will be in the stands with his shirt off.
Nah, yes. But like it'll be a team that, you know, doesn't exactly have ACC height and weight, but they're good at their tackling angles.
Yes.
I think that Jahad Thomas gets loose for like two long touchdowns, but otherwise is kept in check. So it's a deceiving stat line of like 20 carries, 100 yards.
Yeah. Look, these are a couple of really good defenses.
Couple stout defenses.
I'm excited for this game. Like, I think we're, but like I said, like 20-6. Like, I just don't see where Wake Forest really gets in the end zone here. Let's talk about tackling angles. We got to
worry about touchdowns. I'm getting ahead of myself talking about tackling angles.
Yeah, can we pivot for a second here?
Absolutely.
Can we talk about this photo that Tiger Woods just
did? I would like to. Please.
The Mac Daddy Santa photo that Tiger Woods just... Have you seen this, Chip?
Should I describe it
for our podcast listeners?
Please do.
It looks like Eldrick Woods has either a Santa hat or just a white wig.
It's a Santa hat. It's a Santa hat, but he's got the Raiders hat with the all-black logo covering the red part. So it just looks like white hair. He's topless. With his arms crossed over his chest. He's got the black shades on, and he's got his bleach blonde goatee.
He has apparently let grow out, and it's at this point a couple inches long.
He looks like one of the Steiner brothers.
His left hand is perfectly positioned to boost up his right hand is boosting up his left bicep. Like he's doing that trick where you fold your arms and you can make your muscles look bigger.
Yeah, and he's got the product placement with the Tag Heuer.
Mm. Gotta keep sponsors happy.
Gotta keep the sponsors. I don't know. Like, I've been mesmerized with this for the better part of 3 minutes since it got tweeted.
I've been a little distant
during this Wake Forest discussion.
I'm glad that Tiger feels comfortable.
That's when it popped up.
Tiger's flourishing right now. I'm going to sit back and just enjoy this.
I'm happy for Tiger, man.
I want to know, like, the best part is he signed the tweet TW, which is how you know he set the tweet out.
Hell yeah.
And I have multiple questions. Who took the picture?
Kids.
But it's like, and like, how mad is his brand manager right now that he fired off this tweet without letting them know?
Oh man, Mac Daddy Sam.
Yeah, the TW actually means that it wasn't passed through the proper channels.
No, this was direct from Tiger's phone, Twitter web client.
Text to tweet.
The kids love Mac Daddy Santa. Yeah, the kids.
That's a meme.
Mac Daddy Santa's going to hit up a Perkins tonight, my friend. Anyways, we should probably get back to picking games.
Nah, you know, this is it. This is it. I'm done. Guys, we got to get back to do the semifinals and some more of the New Year's Six and New Year's fun. So we will reconvene before that time. But in the meantime, make sure that you subscribe to the SEC on CBS podcast. I will also be back with the Dodcast next week. Gave the Dodfather the week off from his duties. Also, I believe we have Eddie George in the mix. So keep your eyes peeled for that one. I'll try and blow the trumpet where I can. Robbie, Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank you, Tiger Woods.